time to tune in to the podcast with wise words, glasses on, ears open. Many things you learn from industry leaders and permobil experts. Welcome to the point of view of the wheelchair nerds. Extra, extra.
Be the hammer.
You're listening to something great.
I'm great.
You finally arrived at the place.
Welcome to Wheelchair Nerds, a podcast to connect and inform people who utilize, prescribe, and provide seating and wheel mobility equipment. I'm your host, Angie Kiger. Before we jump into today's topic, a brief reminder that the information in this podcast is for educational purposes only and is not intended to be medical, billing, or legal advice. Now, let's get to it. Hey, Wheelchair Nerds, welcome to another episode in season 3 of Wheelchair Nerds. Wow, it is the fall of 2025. Hard to believe we are 3/4 of the way through this year. This week, we are super excited to bring you guys a new episode of Wheelchair Nerds, but we're doing something a little bit different. A few weeks ago, we hosted a webinar with Spinergy that featured one of our clinical educators from the Northwest, Catherine Sweeney. She's a physical therapist and has also been on Wheelchair Nerds before. And Tara Shetterly, who is a Tie Light wheelchair user, Spinergy user, and has quite the presence on social media as she educates fellow end users on various things related to wheelchairs. So check out the recording of this webinar, and we really hope you guys enjoy it. Thanks so much.
But I wanted to say, first of all, thank you to Spinergy for inviting us. This is a webinar sponsored by Spinergy and organized with that team as well as Tara. So thank you for including us. And it's going to be an interview style, just like Hawkins said. And then we're going to definitely look forward to your questions. But I'm just getting to know Tara myself in this process. So I'm going to kick it off and ask a little bit about you and for those that are just meeting Tara as well, can you share a bit about your journey and how you came to be a user of a manual wheelchair and just so we can kind of understand your starting point?
Yeah, very good question, Catherine, to start us off, just so that like everyone kind of understands like where I'm coming from. So I obviously, like, I'm Tara Shetterly, I'm 21 now, but 4 years ago I had a spinal cord injury at T11 and T12. So I am a paraplegic now, and I've been using a Tie Light chair since 2020, so like almost 5 years. So yeah, now I kind of make content about being in a wheelchair and everything that comes along with that. And that's kind of how I landed here in the webinar with Spinergy and Permobil. There you are. I thought
awesome.
You were like,
awesome. And if you can, you know, now that we know you, how long you've sorry, can you guys hear me now?
Kind of. I think you're frozen.
Okay.
I see you.
Hang on a second. Uh-oh, hang on.
I can hear you and see you now, Catherine.
Okay, great. So tell us about, what was your first wheelchair experience like when you were going through the evaluation process?
Yeah, so this is my second chair now, actually. But my first chair was also a Tie Light chair. My ATP happened to be also in a wheelchair. He came to the hospital where I was at the time, I think 2 weeks after I had been paralyzed, to like sit down with me, do my measurements, and kind of just like ask me questions to find like the right fit. I think based on what I hear from a lot of other wheelchair users is that their like first chair is usually not the best like to fit their lifestyle, unfortunately, which is why like I'm very passionate about like bringing awareness to like other wheelchair users so that they can maximize as best as they can for their wheelchair evals. Because I think my first chair, I mean, it was like, okay. But there was things that I obviously changed on my second chair. A lot, actually. It just wasn't like a great fit for me, like physically, the measurements. But then also just like the lifestyle of the chair did not really match mine. So there was a lot of things that I think could have been improved on, which again, you know, everything's an improvement game and we're still working on it.
All right.
So then back at you, Catherine. Obviously, we know that you work for Permobile, but do you mind sharing your role at Permobile and then just your clinical expertise as a PT and an ATP?
Sure. So I, by clinical background, I was trained and I'm licensed as a physical therapist. And I've been a physical therapist for over 30 years. And along the way, I had worked in different settings. And I found my passion for wheelchair technology when I worked in an acute rehab center in Portland, Oregon. And that's where I really saw our clinical role and how important it is for us to be able to advocate for consumers using wheelchair technology. And that became my passion. I also have two family members that are full-time wheelchair users. And so from an earlier age, I really understood when a wheelchair works well and when it doesn't and the impact it has on that person's function, their medical status. So that was an easy fit for me. Along the way, I had an opportunity to leave the clinic and then work for Permobile in hopes of fulfilling my second passion, which is improving, getting as many clinicians to want to do evaluations and to want to provide this service, because sometimes it's hard. It's hard to find clinicians that are well-versed in this type of technology. So that's my secondary passion. So this is a perfect fit for me. So yeah. I cover the West, you know, upper West Coast, Pacific Northwest, and I train and I work with clinicians trying to help them understand pros and cons and how to help the process.
Yeah, you are the perfect match for this webinar. So then, as far as like helping other people prepare for their wheelchair evals, I wanted to ask you what you think some key things are that people should know before going into their wheelchair eval.
Yes. So this is something that is really important to realize is that it's the time when you go to the clinic can be really compressed depending on you know, how much scheduled time you have for that first visit or how many visits you'll get. So it's really, really important to go into the evaluation knowing, your medical history. Just come with a list. If you can write down your history and just hand it to them, they can quickly review it and then they can put it in much quicker than an oral history. You know, telling the story is one piece for sure, but some of those basic diagnoses, if you just go in with a list, just like when you go to the doctors with your medication list, it's easier to have a medication list than to go in with a bunch of bottles. It just takes up a lot of your time that should be for conversation instead of just a physician documenting or a therapist. So go with your medical history. My chart is a tool nowadays. Many, many people have access to their whole chart or most of it. So, you know, maybe download stuff from my chart. The other piece that is even more important is to go in with your goals, what your priorities are for what that equipment needs to help you do. From a medical standpoint, a participation standpoint, a function standpoint. I mean, I see Amanda has a sweet baby in her lap right now. And, you know, if you're a wheelchair user, they need to know that you're a parent of a young child. How I would balance a manual wheelchair when I know you have to reach and pick up, all of those things are, go into how we talk about the chair configuration. Are you working? What is your all of your life roles? We need to know right from the get-go so that we can make sure we're thinking about it when we're suggesting tools. So the more that we know about you up front, the better outcome you're going to have, for sure.
Those are some great points. I fully agree. And then I think you kind of touched on this, but As far as like the medical documentation, is there anything else you would tell people before their wheelchair eval to prepare besides just making a list?
I would say besides the medical piece, the other piece that, because the interview I would spend, the longer I did wheelchair interventions, the more the interview was critical for me. Come with a list of what you like and don't like about your current equipment. Have that already in mind. Make a list of your must-haves versus your like-to-haves. Because somewhere along the ride, sometimes it's going to be a conversation about we can do this, but the chair can't do both things because it just doesn't work that way. So what are your I must-have in my chairs, and what equipment have you already tried and you're already ruled out because it didn't work for this reason? Come with a good understanding. Help us understand what equipment configuration you want to avoid or replicate in your current equipment.
Yeah, I totally agree. And then one other question. So what questions should someone ask during the eval to ensure that their needs are being met?
I would definitely ask the clinician in terms of what their, like, how long is this process from a clinical standpoint? I really advocate, especially if you're using the more complex end of things, advocate for, hey, I would really like that fitting to be done with you in clinic. You know, how can I make sure this happens? Because sometimes, as everyone is on the call aware, sometimes there's a gap. They may see you for a few visits, spec out the chair, then there's a gap. They have to discharge you while you're waiting for the funding process. But really, at the delivery, it can be delivered to home, and the clinician never sees you again. But if you really want, I think in my expertise, that the best outcomes are when a clinician and you get back together and you double check everything. Because it's at that follow-up where adjustments might need to be made that we didn't predict when we did the prescription, or you've used it for a few weeks at home. The suppliers dropped it off. You've used it. So now I want to come back in. So you need to kind of advocate for your doctor. I want to come back in at fitting, but also talk about it with that clinician. You know, ask them, I would like follow-up. How do I make sure that happens? What are the to-dos that I can do?
Yeah. Follow-up. Mm-hmm. That makes total sense.
I think I want to shift the spotlight a little bit on you, Tara. Are you okay. All right with that? If I take the next, okay.
So
you ready? Can you share a time in your process where you had to really advocate for a specific feature or type of wheelchair that maybe wasn't brought to your attention during the initial conversations?
Yeah. So that's a packed question. 'Cause I think, like, obviously, like I mentioned, this is my second chair. My first chair, I was, like, evaled for 2 weeks after being paralyzed, which, like, you can imagine, I knew nothing. At the time, I was, like, fully reliant on the ATP to kind of guide me in those decisions. I had no, like, previous preferences. I couldn't say whether I wanted, you know, an air cushion or a foam cushion. Like, absolutely nothing. I couldn't say, you know, like, well, I really, really value having the slimmest chair as I can because I know that there's places in my home that, like, I can't really fit with, like, a wide chair. So, like, as you can imagine, that's, like, the perfect storm for getting your first chair and, like, getting home after you're, like, out of the hospital and, like, realizing all these things. And it just takes time. So when you get your second chair, when you're able to, luckily I was able to before that, like, 5-year mark, there was definitely things that at that point, like, I was like, yeah, we need to change these things. I, at this point, have strong preferences for certain things. So one of those things was no camber. So that's not, like, really an insurance thing that you have to, like, advocate for. But you can, like, somewhat need to advocate just with your ATP and your, like, therapist. In my case, it was an OT. So I think, like, ATPs that have been in the field for a long time, they also have preferences, right? Like, it's not just the, like, wheelchair users that have, like, the preferences. It's also the ATPs. So they'll be the ones to tell you, like, oh, well, like, I strongly don't recommend having no camber for these reasons, which is fine. I think ATPs should always give their opinion, but like an unbiased opinion. And at the end of the day, still listen to the consumer, which is you as the wheelchair user. So if I'm saying like, yeah, I don't want any camber, then don't give me camber. It's more than that. You know, it's things like, I got no camber on this chair. I also like specifically requested that the chair not have any extra width in the seat width. I know that that's also something that like ATPs are kind of like usually add like at least an inch or so, for multiple reasons. I've been told like it's for a winter coat. So you can fit the winter coat and not have it drag on your wheels. Obviously the thing that I think a lot of us have heard, which is like weight gain. And I think like, again, that's not something that insurance cares about so much, but like the ATP you might have to advocate with for yourself. Like, I know my body, I've been paralyzed or I've been disabled for this amount of time. I can tell you I'm not gaining weight. Like, I need to be able to fit in this one spot in my house. And to do that, I need a slimmer chair. Like, as long as your health isn't impacted by not having extra width, then like you are allowed to advocate for what you want. And even that goes for the titanium upgrade on my chair currently. I know a lot of people can't get insurance to cover the titanium upgrade. It's really hard. We did try to get insurance to cover it. They denied it, unfortunately, like they do for a lot of other people. Luckily, I have a local DME company versus like the national suppliers, New Motion, National Seating and Mobility. I have a local one. I'm blessed to say that because they worked with me to get that titanium upgrade. So I only paid like a portion to upgrade to titanium instead of paying for the entire chair out of pocket, which is sometimes the case with some of these other national DME companies. So very loaded question. There's lots of things that, you know, like I had to advocate for, whether that's with the ATP or insurance, and then just having to navigate that by yourself sometimes.
I think that is spot on. And, you know, I have to say, I really, over time, my own practice evolved where as I got more experience and confidence, I really, through some good mentorship also, learned that our clinical role is to help educate consumers on, A, what our findings are. You know, if I evaluate a posture and I see a tendency for a curve or a, you know, let people know what we found, let them know what were our thoughts on maybe the first direction we would go, and educate pros, cons, everything. Yeah. This cushion, here's the pros, here's the cons. So that's probably one of the best ways that consumers can advocate for themselves is, you know, as you're going through the conversation, okay, well, tell me about that cushion versus this. What should I think about? Because the final choice is yours. Yeah. And as a clinician, what I would document is pros and cons discussed. I'll give you one example. A client I'd seen had really, he had cerebral palsy. Lovely 60-year-old man with terrible, terrible postural tendency and scoliosis. He was all hunched over. He was super unstable. And he rolled in, and I was thought to myself, oh, I can't wait to do this. I'm going to do some custom seating. I'm going to stabilize him, not fix his posture, but at least make him stable. And he started laughing at me when I started talking about, after I evaluated him, here's what we're going to do. Here's what I think we should do. And he just laughed at me, and he said, here's what I do every day. I take the coffee order from the university down the street. I pick it up and see this custom box I've mounted in the back of my power chair. They put it in there, and I drive to the professors, and I point to whose coffee is who. If you put me in custom seating, the one main job of my days you're going to take away because I can't rotate. I can't do what I need to do to lean. And so I said, absolutely then. Don't worry about it. And I just documented that we talked about pros and cons. He understands his choice. And so we replicated what was just worn out that worked for him. And that's a good outcome. So yep. That's where you can just ask those questions. Give me the pros and cons, make an informed decision. And then the clinician can just document they had that conversation and you're an informed consumer. That was like a really, you know, big light bulb for me once we really, you know, I saw that shift.
Yeah. I think asking them to like at least have a unbiased like pros and cons discussion is the easiest way to like make a decision what's best for the end user, which is us.
Right. And it's the other piece of this is really understanding that the process involves so many brains and eyeballs. So you as the consumer are the center, the driver, but your stakeholders, we call them, all those involved people are the clinician, your PT or OT, your doctor, your insurance, you know, has eyeballs also and their own rules and regs. And so everybody's kind of circling the process, but really you are the center driver of that process. It doesn't mean everything is funded, and we're going to talk about funding in a minute, but it does mean that you are the driver of the final decisions.
Yes. Yep. Yep.
All right. So what advice would you give someone who feels intimidated or unsure about speaking up?
Okay. So this is also a really good question. I think I've like vaguely touched on this a little bit. And so have you, Catherine, as far as like making a list of what you really, really want. I think it can be intimidating, you know, like you don't like, depending on who you are as a person, like you don't want to come off as like demanding or, you know, something, but you do still like you have this chair for probably 5 years before your insurance gets you a new one here. So it's important. Like you don't really like want to get a chair that like you didn't really want at the end of the day because you were intimidated to just ask. So I think making a list is like the easiest way to like make yourself feel like assured. You're not forgetting anything to touch on during the very limited usually amount of time that you have during that wheelchair eval process. I think a big suggestion I have to people is like, if you are unhappy with the service that you're receiving with your ETP or your DME company, change. Like you don't have to, like, let's say you have this like disability and your doctor like referred you out to a company. If you don't like them, you are not stuck with them. I have changed my company and I've changed ATPs. You can simply just request a new one or honestly just call. That is like the easiest thing because your ATP is probably going to be the one that you're speaking with most directly, most frequently about this. So if you don't trust them, you don't get along with them, you feel like you're getting nowhere as far as your voice being heard, change. Don't stay. But yeah, make a list. You can change your ATP, or like, even if you don't know the name of certain things that you want, just having photos of like kind of reference photos, like I really like the way this wheelchair is configured for this reason, and just being able to like visually show them also helps if you're not like previously familiar with like all of these very specific niche terms. So yeah, those are my like three big kind of tips as far as advocating for that.
Awesome. Awesome. I do think this is a really good point to plug a really good resource that is going to be in the chat. So there's a link to this resource in the chat, and it's called the Wheelchair Handbook. And what it is we, and I'm going to actually try to screen share here. Hang on a second. And I'll just show you kind of a hang on, so window, entire screen. Here we go. It's written to educate consumers for this process. So let me see if you guys can see that.
Yeah, your screen sharing.
Okay. So let me go to here. And it's called the Wheelchair Handbook. And it's divided into chapters. And so there's a chapter on manual chair. There's a chapter on power chair. Terry, does that look right? Is it the full screen?
Yeah.
Okay, good. I just kind of pulled out the power wheelchair chapter page just real quick so I could show you how it's organized. And what it does is it breaks down, for example, power wheelchair features into categories of what would be, for example, the lowering foot plate is what this page is covering, how the power foot plate goes to the ground. How could that potentially help you from a health benefit How could it potentially help you from a social engagement benefit and potentially a functional benefit? And then the next page might be on power tilt or recline. So it's meant to preload your brain before you go into the evaluation. There's also some nice, you know, helpful tips and tricks about, you know, for the power section about battery charging. There's a chapter on funding. There's a chapter on the wheelchair evaluation process itself. So it's just a really nice way to prepare yourself and just keep it at your, you know, somewhere in your house so you can remind yourself of topics to bring up and questions to bring in before you get there.
Yeah, that is a wonderful, wonderful resource that I didn't even know about before working with Catherine and Permobile. So yeah, honestly, highly recommend you guys look at it in the chat. The link should be there. Okay. Moving on slightly, so what are some common challenges people face with insurance or funding approval? Very, very big question.
Very big question. And I think some of the common challenges are that, first of all, the documentation that your clinician submits, your PT and OT from all that time spent evaluating you, sometimes doesn't match up with the doctor's documentation. I've had that happen quite a bit where the doctor says your strength is such and such, 4 out of 5, which is just the scale we use. And yet the clinician really did a detailed muscle testing and it's far different. So sometimes insurance is, you know, unfortunately the auth teams oftentimes are looking for, you know, things that might kick it out into a denial. And depending on who you're working with, the insurance authorization team might be, you know, not that hung up with little discrepancies, but sometimes that discrepancy enough is going to require another doctor's appointment so that you can get it all lined up. Or the dates. Your suppliers usually do a really good job with making sure that the dates and the signatures are all lined up and they send a packet to the physician to get signed. Well, sometimes if dates expire, sometimes you have to start all over again. And that's really, really frustrating. The next obvious, most biggest question is what happens is sometimes you'll get denials on things that you absolutely qualify for under guidelines. That happens quite a bit. I'm going to just call it out right now. United Healthcare is a bear to work with. And I'm sure they do coverage really well in other aspects possibly, but I know that, they're tough. They're tough. They're denying so many things that people genuinely qualify for and have documentation for. So that is a real battle. And honestly, what will turn that tide is when consumers start to really cry out, because clinicians, you know, have even Permobile has approached United Healthcare multiple times saying you're inappropriately denying this feature. You're inappropriately denying this feature again and again. And it's different from a manufacturer standpoint, how they approach us. When consumers go to the media or do a class action, you know, whatever, it's the only way that big change can happen. That yeah. being said, I'm really calling out them. They'll probably call me tomorrow. I don't even know. but honestly, consumer involvement is the biggest way to turn that tide. The second thing I would say is you might get a denial for what is appropriate. Appeal it. There is an easy process to appeal it. You basically are signing at the bottom of the appeal, yes, or the denial, yes, I'd like to appeal it. Email your clinician, send them a copy. The clinicians do not get a copy of the denial documentation. Your supplier does, and you do. So if your clinician knows why they denied it, they don't have to reevaluate you sometimes. Most of the times, it's just restating what they put. But appeal it. If they appeal and if the denial didn't work, take it to a standard hearing, which is usually a phone call with a judge. And oftentimes the standard hearing is where you get your stuff overturned because the judge is outside of the insurance company. They hear your medical documentation. They see they qualify and your clinician can attend by phone. You can attend by phone. But without pushing back, they just kind of sometimes they hope that you just take the denial and go.
Yeah.
And sometimes funding, let me just say one more thing. Sometimes there's criteria that you may not qualify for it. So that's where it doesn't mean that you can't have it. It just means there's certain things that if you don't qualify under the rules, which are the rules for until they get better, and they do get better over time. But Then you need to go through alternative funding. So we're going to talk about that later, but you can get alternative funding for some of this stuff. I've had clients get standing power wheelchairs through Help Hope Live. It's a nonprofit GoFundMe site for medical needs. You create a GoFundMe and total strangers can donate to you. Yeah. So sometimes this stuff, you just may not qualify, so you got to kind of work around it, but you should fight back if you qualify for
Or vocational rehab as well. Sometimes pays for things like that. So it's a really good resource. And then I also wanted to ask specifically in terms of funding and approval, certain things that people like and request, and are just unsure of like how to go about it, if these things are ever covered and under what situations, like specifically Spinergy wheels, certain like power assists. I know Permobil does the smart drive. I hear that sometimes that's hard to approve for some people. Then there's a whole market of like other products out there now, like the Firefly and other things. What do you do like as a clinician when your client is asking about certain things like that? Are they ever approved?
Yep, that's a great question. Some things, like the Firefly is a really good example. So the Firefly is an attachment that goes in the front of a manual wheelchair. Right. And for that attachment, it just isn't a funded item under insurance. But sometimes if you're going to go and try to get a grant funding through different means, through different avenues, they still need a denial, oftentimes. So what I would do as a clinician, I would have that conversation, say, okay, we're going to do this much of the chair through insurance. I can definitely qualify. Let's get this. But we're going to put at the bottom, you know, additional items that this consumer would benefit from a medical and functional standpoint. You still put it on there and then let them deny just that section. And then you can take that section of the denial to the grant funding or book rehab or different ways that you're going to use it. And they can see that you've tried. You've gotten your answer because some of those grants do require denial. So I would put it right in my documentation. Yep. And some things just don't even have they call it a HCPCS code. That's a required coding that it's been deemed a medically necessary, blah, blah, blah. If it doesn't have a code, it's just not even a possibility to get funding through insurance for the most part. But that's how you would do it.
Okay. Yeah. That's a really good tip. And then
because clinicians don't want to be a barrier. We don't want to be a barrier. We want to help connect the dots to all the things that would be beneficial for you.
Okay. And then kind of similar, how can someone make a strong case for the equipment they need? So we talked a little bit about like from the clinician standpoint, what you can do, but what can we do as consumers?
I think what we covered a lot of that already. Go prepared, with a clear idea of what your needs are, advocate, and then go through the, you know, if you can have the stomach for the process, it is a process. Right. But honestly, being a part of the evolution, Seat Elevate is a good example. Seat Elevate is now a covered item because, you know, a lot of the clinicians and consumers and advocacy disability rights lawyers got involved and finally pushed Medicare to fund it. So there's portions of that we need consumer involvement also. So that's another way you can advocate so that funding continues to evolve and improve.
Okay, good to know.
By the way, titanium is another piece of this. There's quite a few legislative efforts to try to get titanium back as a funded item through Medicare. Medicare used to fund alternative materials, and then they stopped. Don't know why. So there's some bills working its way through Congress. So when there's a consumer point where they ask for consumer input, or if you want to call your senator and say this is really important, we'll send out the current bill numbers that you can cite in an email or call. It makes a difference.
That's
the
really
largest voice is consumers.
Yep. Okay, and then we've touched on this a little bit. Now it's time to finally talk. What resources or organizations can help with the appeals or denials?
So it really helps to involve your clinician, as I mentioned, but also be aware that there are ombudsmans with Medicaids usually connected, and they're basically consumer advocates. So they are inside of a Medicaid, for example, and they can look at your charting and try to help resolve this barrier to access, especially when you have, you know, enough documentation that is saying that you could indeed benefit. The other piece is there's in every state, and in every large city, but in every state, I would Google disability rights law firms, because there are specialist lawyers that can help answer questions. And I've had them oftentimes come on the fair hearing. One of the people that would call in was a disability rights lawyer that would look at the case. And I know that they have pro bono type of, they understand that this is a scenarios that they don't have a lot of money. You know, you yeah, can't even, right. You know, so that's, I would definitely contact your disability rights law firms just to get an idea of who they are, what can they offer, what are they working on that, and would they be able to help you in your appeals?
That's a really good tip. I know, I want to say, is it every state that also has a disability resource center? I want to say as well. I know we yes. have one in Virginia.
Yes, yes. No. That is. I think okay. every state has at least one center. Ours is in Salem. So usually the capital city tends to be yeah. where a lot of them are located. So,
yeah.
Okay. And we're almost wrapping up with this portion, because then it's going to be the Q&A section coming up. So, the last few things I wanted to touch on, Tara, how can we as clinicians better support clients going through the process?
Okay. So I think another like really huge discussion. I think we've kind of echoed this throughout the conversation we've had so far, but like at the end of the day, clinicians, whether it's ATPs, the like evaluating therapists, the PT or OT, we are the end user. Like that means that like we will be the ones with the chair for like a very long time. Like I said, like usually 5 years. So the biggest thing is just like listening to us, giving those like unbiased pros and cons, their perspective from like a clinical experience is like super important for people like me when I was first paralyzed 2 weeks out, had no idea anything about wheelchairs, like anything at all, didn't know what anything was called, had no preferences. And in those scenarios, like the ATP like holds the power, you know, like they are the ones in charge of making sure that you are fully aware of the decisions that you're making, but at the end of the day to allow you to make those decisions, which is a thing that like unfortunately I think doesn't happen sometimes from what I hear of other people. That decision was just not really allowed to be made by them, which is, you know, like really disappointing. So I would say just leave the decision at the end of the day to us. So yeah, I think that's the main thing, is to give the full explanation of what something is. Like, okay, the example of having no camber. Of course, you know, that lends to less side stability. Yes, I could like fall over more easily. I have, it's happened. And I knew that, you know, like I understood, that was probably like a possibility. And ATPs obviously don't want people falling over. Nobody wants someone falling over. So that's why, you know, they might discourage you from it. But as the consumer, if you know that that's the possibility, but you also know that you need to be able to fit through a doorway, and having no camber would give you that little bit, on top of having no extra seat width, that would allow you to fit more places. That decision is yours. And you just need to, you know, if someone's not, allowing you to make that decision, ask, like, be the one to like take control of the situation, and make those decisions and ask those questions.
I think that's a good point. And that reminds me about, you know, oftentimes these conversations can get overwhelming. And so feel free to say, well, show me what you're talking about. Let me try. Instead of just, you know, oftentimes, obviously, dealers aren't going to have everything to show. They're not going to always have every demo that fits you perfectly before you pull the trigger, but they should be able to have access. And this is where manufacturers help the dealers. We can bring them demos for you to try so that they have what they need.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah, and it may be just like, show me, I want to try it. I want to compare. I'm going to slow the bus down because over a conversation, it's just too much, especially Tara in the beginning, right? Those first 2 weeks. That's why the first chairs that you get as a manual chair, especially, are really, really adjustable because you're going to change. And I mean, by the time you have your third chair, you're like, you know your angles and you are like, you don't need any adjustment. You know
you want to be fixed. Yeah, at that point. Yeah.
So it, you know, definitely trying and asking questions and you know, show me what you're talking about. Because it's too hard to explain and make a big decision based on what people are telling you. So
yeah, for sure.
Should we go to the Q&A?
This is something that came up a couple times is people knowing what is out there, like what are the current options, accessories that you can get, you know, for example, push rims, backrest options. Sometimes people don't see options or able to test them. So how is there a way to kind of see what's out there, possibly try some things just to make sure, you know, you're getting exactly what you need?
Do you want to answer that first, Tara?
I can go first. So that's a really hard thing because I actually never, my local DME company, like, they didn't really have many things to trial. So I didn't really get to, like, firsthand feel the things that I wanted on my chair. But personally, what I did, and I know that this might not be an option for other people, was that I went to Abilities Expos. I drove to the New York one. I've been going for years. I always learn something new. There's tons of booths. It's a free event. Obviously, you just have to get there. It's like a whole weekend. There's like hundreds of booths. All of them, for the most part, are assistive technology related. I know there's a Permobil booth. There's a Spinergy booth. There's an everything booth for wheelchairs. And they have, you know, little demos that you can try. And then also I'd say, like, social media. Like, I know I'm biased. I'm a content creator. But you want people to feel or try it directly. But there are so many videos online at this point that show you, like, this is how the Smart Drive works. This is how the Firefly works. These are all the different wheelchair cushions that I have, and here's why I like this one over the other one. So that's something that anyone has access to for free anytime. So that's a kind of a good resource just online.
That's great. You stole my best answer, is the consumer expos, whether it be Abilities or, you know, let's say that the your local adaptive sports group is having an event. If you go to these events, you meet a lot of people, or even just connecting with other local groups, consumer groups. You all of a sudden you're looking around like, well, why is that? Tell me about that. And that's how, you know, my own personal family members have learned and kind of driven a lot of the choices they made. It was actually from other consumers in person. That's where TikTok and Instagram is amazing now, because you can actually connect with people. And then I would also say, you know, leverage AI. Nowadays, if you can go onto an AI forum and just say, I'm considering wheelchair handrooms, you know, what four companies that have, you know, should I consider for durability, blah, blah. And it'll start giving you at least a few different companies that you may not know exist. And you can be specific, say the US or Canada, if you're in Canada. So you know that it's, and at least start kind of surfing some of those websites so you don't have to hunt and peck. All the big manufacturers have websites, but sometimes you're looking for some specifics. So AI can be really interesting to generate lists a little bit faster for you for some of these features.
Yeah.
Good question.
Yeah, that was great. Actually, the chat was following along with some of their own suggestions. So a lot of us are on the same page.
Yeah. Yeah. Anything that we didn't say well, I guess you guys can all read the chat. So go ahead.
Yeah.
So a lot of questions about insurance coverage, as probably would expect. So A couple of people are talking about titanium and carbon fiber chairs. Some people have been able to get theirs paid by insurance. Others haven't. Do you guys have any tips on kind of how to navigate that process and how to have an upgrade like that that is paid for by insurance?
Do you want me to answer first again?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. So I kind of already touched on this. My first chair was aluminum. Obviously, no problem with insurance with aluminum chairs. That's like the standard thing. It is obviously heavier. I'm sure everyone knows that. There's some other things about titanium that just make it more advantageous for me personally and a lot of other people, which is why we are trying to get them covered. Unfortunately, it didn't work in my case. I will say that I didn't appeal it though. I didn't appeal it, but you can appeal it. Like Catherine said, I think at the time my local DME company had just told me like, hey, we can try to appeal it, or, we will allow you to just pay for the upgrade itself, which was a couple hundred dollars. At the end of the day, like I could pay for the upgrade. So I just did that. But I'm not sure if like there are any other options, Catherine, other than that.
So one piece is through, again, alternative funding to see if you can get alternative funding and try to get just that portion covered, whether it be Help Hope Live. Sometimes the ProMobile Foundation, if you've been denied and or you know that it won't be covered, like Medicare, you can appeal and fill out a grant request through the ProMobile Foundation, and they can consider assisting with that. Medicare, you know, the workaround right now is that you would have to pay for the entire chair up front, and then basically resubmit. Tara, you just said it. You'd basically pay the supplier just for that upgraded amount, and then submit to Medicare just to pay for what aluminum chair would be. So it's I'm not explaining it very well, but I'll put it in the chat tomorrow for resources how to do it. It's a process, but it's not many people can pay for a full chair upright. Outright. So.
I just paid for the upgrade, but that's why I'm lucky to say that I had a local DME company. In the Virginia area, there's a local company that will work with people like that, including myself. So I know that's kind of a little unusual, but yeah.
So I just looked up, I Googled, there's two bills real quick, and I'll put them in the chat, but there's a Senate bill and a House bill called the Choices for Increased Mobility Act, and that's trying to address the materials and trying to reinstate the material choice back into the manual wheelchair provision. So I'll put that into the chat right now so people have that.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you. So this is an interesting question. How do you suggest handling an ATP claiming that trialing a chair isn't an option?
I would ask more questions and say, you know, sometimes it may be that if you're looking for a perfectly fit carbon fiber chair, that to trial and they, there's maybe your dimensions are beyond what that chair can even be made. That might be part of it. But if it's really not a outside the realm type of chair, maybe ask them, you know, is there a manufacturer that you could call to get a demo that I can try? I need to try it in my house. If it's anything really, really, really unique, they're probably correct that it's going to be hard to even get a demo for you to try. But for the most part, those, you know, most standard sizes and standard type of complex rehab, there should be a close enough demo to get an idea. Even if you can't sit in it, for example, a power chair with a certain things, even if you can't sit in it, at least you can kind of see it, touch it, feel it. But you may not be able to you know, exactly you know, see or sit in the exact dimensions of what you're looking for.
That's a good tip.
But that's where manufacturers can help suppliers. Ask them to reach out to the manufacturer.
Okay. That's good. That's helpful. So This is kind of another more practical question. If you get a chair that has errors when it was ordered, how do you navigate getting that fixed?
Ooh, okay. So I haven't had a huge personal experience with this. Correct me if I'm wrong, Catherine, but from what I've heard from other people, they were telling me that if you receive a chair from your DME company, it's been made, and it's arrived to your home, you get it. But there's something majorly wrong with it, whatever that is. I've heard that you just don't have to sign the paperwork, like accepting the chair, and you can ask them to fix that. Is that true?
So yes, and this is why it's important, I also think, to do a fitting in clinic. For a complex chair, it's really helpful to do that whole team piece with the clinician, because A, everybody's on the same page. You were in the same room when the chair was spec'd out. So there might be conversations that the pros and cons that we can remind each other of. Maybe we ordered it wrong despite our discussion or our agreement. So everybody can get back in the same room and figure out, is it just an adjustment, or is it something that is absolutely not what we just determine when we spec this chair out? You don't have to sign for it. But that's the other piece. Sometimes I've had, in my own experience, in errors that I've made as a clinician when I was really first getting into this, where we had the manufacturer's rep come in as well and try to determine, what is happening here. And I've had to own mistakes and say, this was on me. I spec'd this chair out thinking this, thinking that, And so that's why it's really helpful to have the whole team together. And to Tara's point, don't really sign until you're really sure it's what you expected.
Yeah. And then also, like, as far as not so much errors, but just things that you don't like anymore. I, on my first chair, I changed backrests like 4 times. It was literally like once a year. I was just, it wasn't an error. It was just, I wasn't satisfied with them. I didn't like them. They were not helpful. I had like back pain every day, which is obviously not ideal, and directly related to the equipment. So it wasn't an error, but I worked with my DME company and they worked with me, and they just kept giving me backrests. And insurance paid for it. I don't know what they did. I don't know if that's unusual, but if you're unhappy with something, I think just tell them. Like, because sometimes you never know. They might actually be able to fix something or get you something different.
And Danny just had a good comment in the chat. I did the exact thing, and I just called the DME and explained that they still let me send it back. Not sure if every DME would do that. And that's a good, and that's the piece, is that it's really good to also be cognizant that there are limits to how many backs people can send out, but there's also a good partnership. There's some really good dealers that are able to work with you. And it's important just to ask and see where they're at.
Yep. The worst thing they can say is no, that they can't, do anything, or it's denied. So just ask.
Yeah. And Natalia, I would say for her question, what if I sign but realize that the problem exists the next day when using it? That might be, again, just say, hey, I think I need to come back to clinic. Wherever you spec it out and say, hey, this is what I'm experiencing, and really kind of get everybody back on the same page. And because sometimes, I might as a clinician have to document a change. But it may just be an adjustment. It may be something that is changeable.
Right. Like the backrest angle, something like pretty easily fixed.
Yeah. Yep. What other questions have you seen earlier that we should tackle, Håkan?
Those are some of the biggest ones. I do see that Chad has his hand up, so I just want to give you, Chad, opportunity to ask your question. I don't know.
Yep. Yes, it's just easier for me to turn on my microphone rather than try to enter the chat. I'm totally blind and I don't use a wheelchair, so it's kind of crazy for me to be here. But Tara and I were exchanging comments on Instagram yesterday, and she said, "Oh, it's not crazy for you to do it. I'm glad you're doing it. So thank you, Tara."
I hope you at least learned something, and I hope everyone else did as well. Whether you are using a wheelchair and know someone that is, or you're just trying to learn better yourself, become more aware of things.
Yeah, and I do have a question for you, Tara. So you mentioned no extra seat width on your chair. Does that, since you have a spinal cord injury, does that not put you at, like, I'm thinking like pressure sores or something like that. I don't know a whole lot about this, but
that's a good question. I think there's a lot of reasons why. So I also have an occupational therapy assistant degree. We did have an assistive technology class. We did go over like fitting and stuff. And even in my class, you know, they mentioned as far as like seat width, adding like an inch or so, for a lot of reasons. There's so many reasons. For some people, that might be, you know, if they have like a very bony hips or something, that could be a pressure concern. I think it just depends on the person. I think for me personally, it's not ever going to be an issue. Like I have a natural like fat in my thighs, so I'm not really like at a concern for that. And it just lined up with my lifestyle of being able to have a like slim chair, and you know, being able to access as many places as possible. So I think if anyone else out there is like wondering about seat width, just ask, you know, ask your clinician, ask your ATP, see what they say, and then also let them know how you feel and why you think you need less or more seat width.
And I have to chime in here because honestly, Tara, what you chose is best practice. Mm-hmm. So what our measurements are, if I measure somebody to be 18, that's what the seat width should be.
Right, and not because at 19.
Yes. No, because lateral pressure is not the same as vertical pressure. We always worry about pressure injuries with your sit bones, we call them, or your tailbone if you sit real low. Right. But that's because it's gravity and pushing down on a smaller surface. Pressure from the sides on your hips is totally different. There's nothing compressing you. Now, that's not to say if you are much larger than your current chair and you've got side guards, can it? Yes. If you're compressing really, really, you're squeezing in, yes, that is now a compressive force. Totally. But for the most part, If you're wider than your dimensions, you're also moving your cap. That moves your front casters wider. Yeah. So you just want to fit in it exactly to your measurements, ideally. So and you did a great job.
Your shoulders are all awkward when you're trying to, like, it's uncomfortable. There's so many reasons, I think, for active wheelchair users to advocate for not having the extra seat width unless there's something else, you know, specific to you that's different.
And that's not to say, I've had end users say to me, I know what you're saying. I understand what you're saying. I still want extra room. I carry a water bottle there. I'm not going to change that. I say, okay.
Yep.
And then I document, we talked about it. And just to remind me at the fitting, if then later that person comes back and says, this is too wide, it should, then I say, well, this is what we talked about. Here's why we ended up where we ended. You know, this is kind of where we're at. So that's just a really good example. I've made it wider than I would choose. But they have reasons, and that's okay. That's absolutely appropriate.
Up to the end user. I think that's what we've been echoing this entire conversation. It's just up to them at the end of the day to make that decision.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Hawken.
Yeah, so we're almost at time here. Yep. So let me ask you guys one question that kind of is more of a practical. I know there's a lot of them, and for everyone who hasn't got their question asked, I have kept track of everything, so I'll try to get back to you with an answer as soon as we can. So someone was asking, how do you even get referred to an ATP? Like, what is that process from, you know, getting a prescription? And maybe just kind of walk us through that practically, what that looks like for people that are wondering.
Do you want me to take that, Tara?
Probably. I mean, I was referred by my hospital, but, you know, I had a spinal cord injury, so that's like an automatic. Someone that doesn't have a spinal cord injury, where you're the one kind of initiating the process, I'm sure that's a little different. I assume that it would start by just talking to your doctor, but I'll let you clarify, Catherine.
Yeah, it usually starts by talking to your doctor, because your doctor is going to have to be involved at some point anyways. So my charting, or calling your physician saying, I actually want a referral to see a wheelchair a clinician about my wheelchair. It might not be a wheelchair specialist, but there's a lot of clinicians that do wheelchair seating that they just don't call themselves specialists, but they are. So just say, I want to see a PT or a physical therapist or occupational therapist for a wheelchair evaluation. And then you can kind of, he's going to ask you, where do you want me to send it? You can start Googling or use AI to say, I live in San Jose, California. You know, what clinical sites would see me for a wheelchair evaluation? And just get a starting point. Once you get that referral, you can tell your doctor to fax that or not, or send it right through to that clinic for you to see the therapist. In the meantime, also, if you are looking for a supplier, start doing some research, or if you want to change suppliers or keep your supplier, just have an idea, because your clinician is going to want to know who you're working with from a supplier standpoint.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how to start the process. I was just going to thank you for having Hawken and I join, and for everybody that attended. But Tara, you close us out.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So, yeah, I was just going to say thank you guys for everyone who showed up. Again, this will be recorded and kind of live on the Spinergy website. If you kind of didn't catch some things, you want to refer back to it, it's going to be there. It's also going to be on the Permobile podcast, Wheelchair Nerds, where everyone can access the audio to this, but it was really, really fun speaking with everyone, and I hope everyone at least learned a little bit about wheelchair evals, whether you're a clinician or a wheelchair user or otherwise some other kind of advocate. It was fun.
Thanks for checking out this episode. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss a single one. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram. Our handle is @wheelchairnerds. And tell your friends about our podcast too. Oh, and we really appreciate it if you give us a 5-star rating and leave a comment sharing what your favorite thing about Wheelchair Nerds is. Last but not least, if you have a topic you'd like us to discuss or know a great guest, hey, it could even be you. You could be that next great guest. Send us an email. Tell us why. You can reach us at wheelchairnerds@permobile.com or DM us on one of our social platforms. We love hearing from you. Along with the wheelchair nerds, the wheelchair nerds, the wheelchair nerds.